The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Hey, meanwhile, on planet Earth, the press conferences yesterday, look at Jimmy Butler does a little Randy Moss action there with Bam Adebayo is answering questions for the media. Let's just say he's distracting him as he was trying to see Bam look over like,
right.
Come on, bro.
Right, yeah.
Come on, bro.
Team chemistry might be too good.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
Is it nighttime because the moon was out?
Yeah. They're having a little fun with one another. That was going on there. Welcome to Get Up, brought to you live, of course, here at the Seaport, and brought to you by Patron. Perfection starts with Patron. CJ McCollum's here, Alan Hahn is here, and guys, we got Zach Lowe as well. And you know what? We got to start on the court because tonight it's huge. Game 3, NBA Finals, it tips off in Miami. You got two teams who last played on Sunday where Nikola Jokic dropped that 41 points, but it wasn't enough as Miami outscored Denver by 11 in the fourth quarter to win by 3. Now, the Nuggets, they hit on the road, and on the postseason, they're just 4-3. Compared to 9-1 at home. And they've struggled defensively, allowing 10 more points per game on the road. But Denver, well, they can win tonight. History says they'll be in control of the series all time because the Game 3 winner of a 1-1 final series goes on to win 80% of the time. All right, so Game 3 tonight. And Alan, in your opinion, which team needs it more? Is it the Nuggets? Is it the Heat?
Well, it's the Denver Nuggets. This is like a virtual must-win for them, in my opinion, just from watching the first two games and also seeing how things have played out since. Because when your head coach is at the podium calling out your effort, there's not much more he can do at that point. What's he going to say if you lose another game? You get to a point where he chooses that moment to call his team out publicly. You don't normally see that anymore in professional sports. So he does that at the highest level. He's sending a message. It's a wake-up call to his team. And then after that, they have a video sesh. They go through some mistakes and obvious ones. I mean, when you think about the open threes that they are giving up in this series, the average is 6.5 feet. Of a defender on these three-point shots that Miami's making. That's embarrassing. There was one shot where Strus made. It was 18 feet away. It was the closest defender. You know, the court is 50 feet wide, right? Like a third of the court was left wide open for a guy to take a three. We got problems in Denver, and they've got to figure it out. Because if you lose this game, remember how you were complaining about nobody's talking about you? Everybody's talking about you now because you are supposed to win. You're the better team, quote-unquote. You lose this team, he'll be talking about you, but it won't be the way you want them to.
And I think teams have found out, especially when it comes to the Miami Heat, this is a team you do not want to give life. And You lose this game and Miami takes control, oh boy, it'd be something. Who do you think needs this win more tonight?
I think Denver absolutely needs this win more tonight. They were 8-point favorites in games 1 and 2. They lost the game at home in which they were up 15 points. They lost the game in which Jimmy didn't play his best basketball. He had a great all-around game. He passed the ball well. He defended well, but he didn't have his spectacular moment. They lost the game where, like you said before, guys are getting wide open threes. Strus, the best shooter on the Miami Heat's team, Duncan Robinson, wide open. Bam, walking in an 8-foot pull-up jumpers.
Yeah.
The sense of urgency wasn't there, and I think Mike Malone wants it to be there tonight because he understands that with a Spo-led team, If you give them an advantage and you give them a lead, they're not going to look back, and they're great at executing in the fourth quarter. They are great at mixing up their defenses, mixing up their coverages, and that Miami nightlife is also undefeated.
Oh. Yeah. Liv, huh? You're talking about that other Liv we talked about there in Miami.
The one that cost you.
Yes. Zach, what do you think? Who needs this win more tonight?
The answer should be Miami, because if they lose, home court flips right back to Denver. All the work they did winning game 2 is undone. But I also think it's the Nuggets because these series sometimes have a way of snowballing. You give the Heat a lead, you give them life, you give them confidence, they start to get mean, they start to get nasty. Meanwhile, you've already wobbled internally a little bit. You had 6 or 7 breakdowns the Denver Nuggets did. That would have been bad regular season breakdowns, bad like October, November breakdowns on defense in game 2. Then you had a film session that was probably a little bit ugly. You had Michael Malone on the podium calling you out. If you lose tonight, then all of a sudden it starts to feel a little uncomfortable, and it feels real comfortable on the other side. And I'm not saying Denver can't dig out of it. If they lose tonight, they can still win the series because they're a tough, strong, really good team. But sometimes these things start to snowball a little bit out of your control. And I think if they lost tonight, depending on the manner of that loss, that could be the case here. So I'm going to go Denver needs to right the ship stat.
CJ, you know, the Nuggets are 0-3 when Jokic has scored 40 or more in the postseason. Did the Heat find a little something here when you look at game 2? Say, hey, look, let Jokic score 40 or whatever, but we'll still win games.
I don't like the term let because this is the man who gets what he wants. Offensively, he can do everything. He can post up. He can make the right pass, make the right decision. He can impact and beat you scoring or passing. This was a case of them figuring out how to contain the other players. You know, put Jimmy Butler on Jamal Murray. Put Bam on Joker, run more matchup zone, mix in a 2-2-1 back into his zone, mix in a bit of a triangle and two, if you will, where they're zoning on the backside, but kind of man on the two best players. Spo is continuing to figure out ways to try to make the game uncomfortable for everyone else. He's trying to make it uncomfortable for Joker, but he's never rattled, he's never sped up. The difference in this game is going to be their ability to adjust and adapt and to get their three-point shooters quality looks and to play defense a little bit better so that Gabe Vincent isn't walking into three-pointers.
Alan, why is Denver losing all the time when Joker has big nights scoring the basketball?
Well, you saw it on that graphic, the 0-3 graphic. Below it, it gave a great stat, which is how many points they're giving up in those games. There it is right there, 118 opponent points per game in those games. That's unacceptable. Their defense in 2 of the 3 games, their 2 worst defensive ratings in the playoffs when he scored 40. So he's scoring 40, but they're also not defending in those games. Is this coincidence, or is there something about the role players, like you mentioned, the other guys aren't getting the ball as much because he's doing all the scoring? Do they sort of get lost because guys like to score? I mean, guys like to see their shots go in, and suddenly it's amazing you become better defensive players when your shots are going in. He's averaging, up until game 1, he's averaging 82 passes a game in the playoffs. It's by far the most of any player in the playoffs this year on average. He only had 66 passes in game 2. So they were taking away his ability to be a passer, making him more of a shooter and scorer. That's got to change. How they do it will be interesting, but it's really going to be up to the supporting cast players to stay engaged.
Zach Lowe, what are you seeing?
Yeah, the idea that they're letting Jokic score or they're happy to let him score to get his points is sort of contradicted by the fact that their number one goal on defense is stop him from getting the ball. Bam has been incredible, fronting the post, denying entry passes. They're making it hard for him to get the ball in the first place, which is why he's just dribbling down the court into his post-ups because that's the easiest way for him to get him the ball. What they are doing really well is A, taking away the easiest passes, the best passes. They're being very careful with their help. They're helping a little, but not too much. And B, mixing up defenses so often that the Nuggets just can't get comfortable. They can't get a rhythm. They don't know. Are they going to be fronting? Are they going to double this time? Because sometimes they are double teaming them. Are they going to half double? Are they going to play zone? What are they going to do? And it's hard for everyone else to get in a rhythm. And you see this sort of paralysis take over where the role players are just standing around. The Nuggets need to get their life back, their zip back. And I think they'll come out and play a better game tonight.
You know, on the other side, you have the Miami Heat, who right now the best three-point shooting team in the postseason. CJ, is it as simple as the outcome of this game comes down to three-point shooting for the Miami Heat?
Make or miss.
That will help. It's a make or miss league, and that will help. That was essentially the only difference in game 1. I think Strus went 0-for-9. I think Caleb Martin didn't shoot the ball well, and they still had a chance to win game 1. So if they make shots, that helps. But I think the other thing that we're not talking about here is the fact that Jamal Murray only had, 16 points in game two? Mm-hmm. Jimmy Butler did a tremendous job of guarding him, making it difficult on him. And he put a point of emphasis on making sure that his shooters got touches early and were comfortable. People are talking about how many points Jimmy scores each night. He's making sure his guys get touches. And I look for Joker to have a similar mentality tonight, understanding that he can go get 18 in the third quarter again if he needs to. But if MPJ, KCP, you call him the alphabet guy.
Yeah.
If they're not getting touches and involved early, they're in trouble because defensively, it's not the same type of effort that we're seeing from them when they're not getting shots.
Is it just as simple as Miami making threes?
CJ, as a player, does it bother you when we boil it down to almost that simplicity where it's a make or miss league? And look at the numbers, 41% from three, they win in the playoffs. Yeah. 35%, they lose these games. Miami has lived with that three-point shot, which is kind of out of character because during the regular season, they were the third worst three-point shooting team in the league.
Now the postseason,
but
they're
the
best.
In the postseason, this has been a weapon of theirs. But I hate doing that to this game. Yeah. This game is too hard to say, well, they just made their threes. That's why they won.
It's not fair to just talk about the three-point shooting because we're not talking about the fact that the Miami Heat made real adjustments. They started Kevin Love. Kevin Love gets 10 rebounds, creates an opportunity where Joker has to rotate out and actually close out on him because he has shot credibility. They go more matchup zone. They mix in almost essentially zone on makes, man on misses, but it's a rotating man on misses where there's extra help. Jimmy's roaming. He's fighting over screens. They're doing the late blacks, as we call them, which is a late switch. This was a well thought out and executed game plan where Spo looked at the game, looked at the film, talked to his team and said, okay, I'm not going to wait. I'm making my adjustments now. I might have gave this guy a DNP for half a season, Duncan
Robinson.
Did not
play, by the way. Mm-hmm.
I might have gave this guy a DNP for a series and a half. Kevin Love hasn't played since the last series, but this is a culture where guys are always ready, they're always professional, mm-hmm. and they always do their job. And that's why I like the Heat in this series because no matter what, they're going to play hard, they're going to compete, they have experience, and we're talking about the fact that they've hit a light switch where they're making threes without Tyler Hero, by the way, who's that's a 40% right. three-point shooter and averages 20 points per game. So I think that speaks to the fact that this Miami Heat team is for real, and we've doubted them over and over and over again and been surprised every time they win. I think now they're showing that
this is serious.
Zach Lowe, put a bow on this.
It's not just about the threes. It's about the kinds of threes. Look, you can't give them open threes off of one action. If you mess up their first action, that can't happen. There's a difference between that. If they run five, six, seven different things on one possession, and on thing number six, you mess up, that happens. They've got to take away the ones that they don't even really make them earn. Just one screen, boom, open three. Overhelping on Jimmy Butler. Leave Aaron Gordon alone. He can handle Jimmy Butler well enough to force a tough two. Don't give him threes. Flip it around, though. Miami is getting nothing at the basket. Only 17% of their shots in the series have been in their restricted area. The lowest rate in the regular season was Phoenix at 26%. At some point, they're going to need to get something at the basket and transition in the half court, however, to win this series.
All right, we're going to talk more about the NBA Finals at the bottom of the hour. Coming up, of course, it is Nikola Jokic. Is he tough to defend? Is he the hardest to guard? CJ's going to tell us and give us his top five guys hardest to guard in the NBA. Plus, are Aaron Rodgers and the Jets the fourth best team in the AFC East? Could Bill Belichick possibly be on the hot seat? We're answering those questions next. But first, a little sneaky Darius time for Graz. We're going to keep it in the AFC East for this one for you, Graz. Mm-hmm. With Bill Belichick being 71 years old coming this season, since 1970, who is the oldest coach to win a division title? The answer for Graz when we come back.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use the code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use the code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
NBA fans, listen up. You've got to try Pick 6, the newest fantasy app from DraftKings, an official partner of the NBA. Getting started is simple. Select if a player will have more or less of a stat. For example, will a player have more than one rebound, or will a player have less than 3.5 assists? Pick your favorite players and compete for huge cash prizes. Download the new DraftKings Pick 6 app now using code Parlay and take on the competition with your best NBA player picks. Only on DraftKings Pick 6 with code Parlay. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 18 plus in most eligible states. Age varies by jurisdiction. Eligibility restrictions apply. Pick 6 not available in all states, including but not limited to Connecticut and New York. For up-to-date lists of states, visit dkng.co/pick6states. Void where prohibited. See terms at pick6.draftkings.com/promos.
Welcome back on Get Up, of course, here with Groz. And we asked the question here, since 1970, who's the oldest NFL coach to win a division title? And he, listen, he's got that face like, I already know this one.
There's a lot of answers flying around the room.
There are a whole lot.
Right? You got to jet
it. You heard a Weave Eubank give
it. Alan Hahn wants me to say Shula, but I said Shula wasn't winning division titles that late. Marv Levy was, and he was in his 70s. I believe he was in his 70s when the Bills were winning division titles in the early, mid-90s. That's my guess. Marv Levy.
Reveal. I mean, the guy's unbelievable. He is unbelievable. He's right. He's right. Marv Levy was 70 years old when he won the division title in 95. Bruce Arians. He even talked about it. He
Arians,
was in the break. He was like, you know, there's
the
Arians.
Yep.
You know, I think there's some. He's right there on it.
I feel like Levy was in his 70s.
Sneaky Darius, not too sneaky for Groz.
Pretty sneaky.
I know, I love
that
it.
Good?
You're right. Time for Teddy Set Go. 3-time Super Bowl champ Teddy Bruschi here, and let's get right into it. Teddy, is this season Super Bowl a bust for Aaron Rodgers and the Jets?
Well, good job, Groz. First of all, research, you can't get him. Anyway, Super Bowl or bust for the Jets? I'd say no. I mean, there are some great teams in the AFC, let alone the AFC East, that Rodgers has to get through. They haven't been to the playoffs in a long time. I'd say playoffs or bust, win a game in the playoffs for the Jets, but that's the way I see it for New York Jets.
Will Daniel Jones and the Giants take a step back or forward?
I still think it's going to be a step forward. The things you learn in terms of how to take care of the football and the decisions you make, I think that they will stick with Daniel Jones. Brian Daboll will continue to preach ball security. And the defense on the other side of the ball, they were 25th in taking the ball away last year. They'll do better at that. So that's where I think this team and Daniel Jones will take a step forward.
All right, should the Patriots sign DeAndre Hopkins?
I think they should. I think this is a coaching staff that needs veteran proven players on the offensive side of the ball to accentuate the leadership of Mac Jones. Mac Jones, I think that he's still a young player, still developing as a leader, and to bring in players like Juju, like DeAndre, any more you can bring in to help Mac to translate that message from Belichick all the way down to the offensive players, also with Billy O'Brien, who's a tough coach to play under sometimes, you need that type of veteran presence to help with that.
Of course, Teddy Bruschi talking about Mac Jones. He's hoping to have that bounce back offensive season under new offensive coordinator Bill O'Brien. Head coach Bill Belichick was asked about that yesterday.
How do you assess how Bill O'Brien and Mac looked communication-wise running the offense?
You know, it's just a teaching process for all of us. So all the players and, you know, again, coaching staff, we got to get back into coaching and teaching and so forth. So it's, you know, we all have something to work on out there, players, coaches, all of us.
Of course, Coach Belichick obviously excited to have Bill O'Brien back in the fold there. Teddy, AFC East is stacked. Where do you have the Patriots in the division?
Yeah, you see my guy Bill Belichick. He's all about business this time of year, even this year in the offseason. But they're on the bottom looking up. I mean, there is just so much talent in terms of players, in terms of the Jets, the Bills, and the Dolphins, that's where they are right now. I mean, I'd go Bills, Jets, Dolphins, then the Patriots. This is not a 5-win football team. This is an 8-9-win football team that, given a few bounces their way, who knows? But right now, with Tua healthy in Miami, which is a big factor, the Dolphins are going to be good. I love the hiring of Vic Fangio. Their defense is going to be great. I think the Jets and the Bills are also going to be very competitive. So it's going to be a tough year for the New England Patriots. Mac Jones is the key. Getting back to playing football the way he knows how to play it, where he feels comfortable. Now he's got his offensive play caller. He's offensive coordinator titled coach in Bill O'Brien. Let's see how he does with that.
So you saw that, Groz, and he's got the Patriots there at fourth. He said it's going to be a tough year. That's something that Patriot fans don't want to hear. It was a tough year last season. From Teddy Bruschi, of all people. So you know Patriot fans are going to be disgruntled. If New England finishes last, don't make the postseason again, what potentially could that mean for Bill Belichick?
Well, I mean, I think it's interesting because, like, I think there is a little bit of discontent there in terms of not continuing the winning after Tom Brady left. And I think if they were to miss the playoffs again, there were already some sort of rumblings around that situation last January, believe it or not. And I think those would intensify a little bit just in terms of, you know, at some point in the future, Bill Belichick will not be the coach of the Patriots, right? So what's that look like and when does it happen? I think those conversations probably have a chance to get started if they miss the playoffs again, if they do finish fourth in the division. I think to Teddy's point, I think they could have a good team and still finish fourth in this division.
No question.
I mean, you talk about defenses, their defense could end up being the best one in this division. I mean, it looks fantastic on paper, but it is a tough division. And so I think a lot of it depends on how ugly it gets, right? If they go 9-8 and barely miss the playoffs, that's a little different than if they were to bottom out and go 6-11. But yeah, I don't think it's out of the question that we're having this conversation in January if they do finish last.
I see you shaking your head. Give me your rankings and what you think about
okay.
that.
Okay. I'm going Bills, number one. Okay. Dolphins, two. I would go Patriots, three. And I would put the Jets.
What?
Even with Aaron Rodgers in last place. I don't see why this is a crazy opinion. They were in last place last year. It's not like this is that insane of a thought. And I will point this out as well. They were 7-10 last year. When they had to play the opposing team's starting quarterback, or their primary quarterback, I should say, they were 2-8. When they were playing the backups, when they were playing Trubisky, when they were playing the third stringers, they were 5-2. This is not a team that was as close to winning a Super Bowl as I think they have put out there. Now, they'll be better with Aaron Rodgers, but I think they're just not as good of a team as we're sort of suggesting.
This flies in the face of everything we've been talking about. We've been talking about this as a Super Bowl-ready roster.
Yeah, that's
now
how
that
they feel about
that
it.
Aaron Rodgers in there.
Sure.
All they were missing is a quarterback that they have got basically all the pieces besides, obviously, up front, protecting. But if they can get that rectified, that this team is ready to win right now, and you say they are at the bottom. Teddy Bruschi, your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I'll say this. Listen, the fact I don't think they're going to be last. I think this defense is just too good. And what the biggest factor, we talk about canceling mini camps. The biggest factor is going to be getting Quinnen Williams signed. Salah sounds good that he's going to be signed because September is going to be key for the New York Jets, okay? Yep. If the New York Jets defense is solidified in the month of September, there will be growing pains, and I believe, for the offense, okay? It's going to look clunky at first. If the Jets carry them through September to where they get their stride, I don't think they're going to be in fourth. They'll be in second or first, but Quinnen Williams is the key. But To look at them last like that, that's just something I don't see. Aaron Rodgers it's amazing what the quarterback can do to both sides or all three sides of the ball, and I think the Jets will be very good this year.
Fascinating. This is fascinating, too, because quickly here, meanwhile, on planet Earth, you know, listen, we debuted a Photoshop Groz
earlier in the show.
Why are we doing this?
Not to be compared to our cowboy garage the other day. I'm telling you, look how young this guy looks.
I show up on time. I do whatever's asked. I don't understand why I deserve this treatment.
Which one's better, Bill?
I don't get it.
Which one's better?
I go with cowboy. It's just a youthful vigor to the cowboy.
You don't like the middle one? I don't know. I was going to vote for the middle one.
I love it. All right.
He's aging gracefully.
And coming up, Jimmy Butler. He's prepared for game three tonight, but we're already looking farther in his future. Could another superstar be on the way for Miami?
Delicious, meat nutritious, and the snack that packs a real protein punch. Wonderful pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Wonderful pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you're on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful pistachios a complete protein, providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snacking game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to Amazon.com/ESPN Pods. That's Amazon.com/ESPN Pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome back to Get Up. Game 3 NBA Finals is tonight, so let's get some first impressions. Zach Lowe, what's your first thing you're watching for in tonight's game?
What do Miami's first few three-point attempts look like? Is Denver's defense on point? Are they making them earn it? Are they making them run 4 or 5 different actions to get a decent three? Or are they falling apart after 1 or 2 actions like they did too many times in Game 2?
Allen?
Yeah, I'm going with the same exact thing. Is the closeouts defensively for the Denver Nuggets as they watched a ton of film, and Michael Malone found a ton of plays where they gave up like 40 points just off of bad defense. So are they closing out or in that 6.5? That's amazing. On their made threes, the average closest defender was 6.5 feet away. Unacceptable. Got to see that better in game 3.
CJ, first thing you were looking for tonight?
I think it's 2 things. I want to see the pace of play, obviously understanding that this is a must-win game. And I want to see the mentality that Joker has coming out. He scored 18 points in the third quarter of game 2. In game 1, he had 10 assists by halftime, 0 turnovers. I'm interested in seeing which approach he takes in terms of the scoring and facilitating and how he balances that throughout the night.
Since you talked about Jokic, you know, yesterday on my podcast, The Last Stand, I caught up with Damian Lillard, CJ's former teammate. He had high praise for Nikola Jokic.
When I really think about it, he's probably the best player in the league. I mean, obviously there's more gifted players and more probably talented dudes out there, but like, he's probably the best basketball player in the league. He shoot threes. He score on the block. He bring the ball up. He make plays. He's smart. He go to the line. He's in shape. He plays with good pace. He rebounds. Like, he gets triple-double after triple-double without forcing the triple-double.
I love that. He gets a triple-double without forcing a triple-double. Right. Do you agree?
I agree. He just takes what the game gives him. And he's the type of superstar who doesn't make it about himself. He loves to ride his horses. He loves his teammates. He talks about how it's about winning to him. And you can see it with the way he plays. He doesn't talk about himself. He doesn't force the action. He can go get 40. He can go get 50 sometimes. But I think he gets more joy in seeing his teammates succeed, seeing his teammates happy, and winning, and that's what he's done consistently. He averaged a triple-double this season, and he did it the unconventional way because he's a guy who can go get 30, but he settled for 25 and 26, mm-hmm. and the fact that I'm saying he settled for that really speaks to his greatness.
Do you think he's the best player in the NBA right now?
The best player in the NBA right now. I do think right now what he does, the all-around game, everything that Dame just said is exactly what we're seeing him do at the highest level, and that's the most important part. Now, the problem is that when you – it's all the optics. It's what the appearance is, what you look right at. When you say best player in the NBA, you're expecting a guy that's jumping through the gym, that can do all kinds of things athletically that are impressive. But if you watch him pass the basketball, there's an athleticism to that that is elite. His ability of the one-handed passes, the touch passes. I compared him recently, in the same number 15, to Patrick Mahomes. And what Mahomes does on the field in the NFL as a quarterback is the same thing we're seeing out of Nikola Jokic. And I also think you appreciate him because, as CJ said, he does seem to enjoy more sharing the ball, setting up teammates, finding the open man, because that's a fun part of the game when everybody's involved. He probably could average 38 a game or 35 a game if he wanted to. But in the game that he likes to play, he likes everybody to touch the basketball, which is probably why that fourth quarter game two and fourth quarter game one, that's not really how he wants to play. And I'm curious if that changes the game.
And
three.
He's at his best when he's facilitating and getting other people involved. Zach, what do you think? Best player in the NBA right now?
Giannis is at home, wherever he is, taking some notes. I'm going to remember what all these guys said because 6 months ago the answer was me. But I think Jokic is, I think, easily now the best offensive player in the NBA. And I do think he's done enough defensively to raise his floor that right now the results speak for themselves. He's in the finals. His team's in the finals. He's averaging a triple-double in the playoffs. He's a two-time MVP. I think now is the time is right to say he has eked past Giannis and Kevin Durant as the best player in the NBA. In a year, we might say something else if Milwaukee's in the finals again, but right now it's Jokic.
Real quick, what's at stake for Jokic? Real quick.
There's a lot at stake. Like, look, again, like what we've said, he's won the MVP for two straight years, and yet not everybody knows him. In basketball, all the experts, Zach Lowe is an expert, CJ's a player. Like, we all know what he's about. But I'm talking about in the sports world, nobody really knows him. We're getting to know him now. 316 million views he has right now. It's the most of any player on social media in the playoffs. He was once top 10, once top 20. Now he's number one. So he's getting the attention now. Right. For him to win a championship now validates everything that he's doing. But to fail to win a championship might lead to some people, again, on the surface, not basketball people, on the surface, to kind of say, man, he's not all that.
Take a listen to this, because Lillard and I also discussed his future in the NBA on my podcast, The Last Stand, and where would he like to play next if he left Portland? Here's his answer.
Everybody keeps saying Damian Lillard is going to be traded to the Knicks. Damian Lillard's going to be traded to the Heat. Damian Lillard should be traded to the Celtics. Damian Lillard's going to be traded to the Nets. If one of those trades went through out of those teams, which one would you be like, that's not too bad?
Miami, obviously. Miami is the obvious one. And Bam is my dog.
He says Miami. Now, he also said, hey, look, you know, listen, it's up to Portland whether or not they're going to trade me. But he also said, I like Brooklyn. And he said, Mikal Bridges is a guy that I'm really good friends with. So I would not mind being traded to the Brooklyn Nets. In your opinion, what's the best fit for Dame Lillard?
This is a loaded question. I think twofold here. I'm going to preface this by saying Dame is my guy. And I know that he wants to be in Portland. And he's always talked about his affinity for bringing a championship to Portland. With Portland. So I'll start with that. The obvious answer here is that if something were to occur, it makes sense. Miami's in the finals right now, right? They have great culture. They have, obviously, Eric Spoelstra. They have a young core. They got veteran players. They have a need for what he brings to the table. Jimmy talked about how he's not really a scorer. He scores, but he's not really a scorer. That is a certified scorer, leader, shot maker, shot taker. So it's obvious Miami's a great fit. We're not talking about Miami nightlife. We're not talking about what Miami has to offer from a tax standpoint, which are all great things. We're talking about the fact that they are consistently known for doing things the right way for their players, by their players. You look at Brooklyn, Mikal Bridges is his friend. It's New York. Dame does lots of things off the court. I'm sure that would be appeasing to him as well. So I would say, hypothetically, if this were to occur, in my eyes, you look at Miami first in the finals, and you look at Brooklyn.
Why is this different? We say it seems like every year we go through this with Dame in Portland, but why do you believe this summer will be different, that Portland will probably pull the trigger?
I think twofold. This is the year where Portland actually has the assets to potentially do something one way or the other. They have to kind of figure out realistically, what do they want to accomplish going forward? You have Anfernee, you have Shaedon Sharpe, you have all these young players. You got Nurk, you got Grant, who's expiring or becoming a free agent. And you have a lot of teams who value Scoot Henderson. You have a lot of teams who value some of the things you have to offer. And I think for Dame, it's a timeline thing. We're on the other side of 30. I said earlier today, we're closer than to the end of our basketball careers than the beginning. So the light switch is coming on in terms of urgency, ability to win now, and what that looks like. We don't all want to play the game forever. We got families. We got things we want to do with our lives. And I think for Portland, it's a matter of doing right by Dame, obviously, but also understanding that there is no wrong decision here. You could decide to go young and you could get a lot of assets for him, or you could decide to try to move some of those young assets to get a player to his caliber that could help win a championship. But bottom line is, I think the market will dictate what happens. I don't think Portland necessarily has the answer in their head right now. They have to figure out realistically what these other teams are looking for and what they're willing to give up for Dame. We're talking about a guy who makes a lot of money, who brings a lot of notoriety to your team, and there's a lot of teams who would give up a lot of assets for him. It's just a matter of what they want and what teams are willing to give up.
Zach Lowe, what do you think best fit would be for Dame?
Well, we got to step back for a second. Number one, how did CJ start his answer? He said Dame wants to be in Portland, and he said later on the podcast, The Last Stand with Brian Custer, that he expects to be in Portland next year. So let's start there. Number two, it's cool to talk about Miami and Miami's culture and what Miami has. What is Miami trading for Damian Lillard? Do they have enough to actually get in the conversation should that conversation ever occur? And number three, when I hear Damian Lillard compliment Mikal Bridges, I don't necessarily think, oh, Brooklyn for Damian Lillard. I think Damian Lillard mentions Mikal Bridges in part to just needle the front office a little bit to say, hey, you got the number three pick. You got Anfernee Simons. I like that dude in Brooklyn. Can we maybe bring him here and give me a better shot to win in Portland? That's what I heard.
Yeah. What do you hear, Alan?
All I hear is that there's only one stage for Damian Lillard if ever he's going to leave Portland. That would be Madison Square Garden, because a player like that on that stage would be incredible. Look, I'll leave that there. Miami, though, just the idea of it, because I'm with Zach, what does Miami really have to offer that would make sense for Portland, which would be obviously in a major rebuild? It would be scary if he ended up in Miami with Pat Riley and Eric Spoelstra and that culture, that guy. Yeah, you'd have Giannis, Tatum, Embiid, everybody be looking at Miami like, oh, man. Nobody wants to deal with that. But I will also say, though, that he has reached a point where Kevin Garnett reached this in 2007, because KG went through the same thing. The loyalty factor, I want to win here. They both had 8 straight playoff runs and then stopped making the playoffs. Their franchises were in an uncomfortable place. Eventually, Minnesota went to KG and said, we're not paying you, and you're worth more to us in a trade at this point. They had to do it. Portland has to go to him and say, we need to get assets and let you move on and then find the best place for him. But if Portland doesn't get a lottery pick in whatever trade for him, they failed.
We'll see what happens. Great discussion here. All right, coming up, who is the hardest player to guard in the NBA right now? CJ McCollum will give us his top five next. Welcome back to Get Up. Time for our fundamental list. CJ gave him some homework. So we wanted to know who are the top five guys to guard in the NBA, CJ McCollum.
All right, I got to preface this with a lot of things here. I was told to make a list about the hardest five players that I've played against in the playoffs.
Yep.
Starting like this.
All right.
I have not had to play against this version of the Joker, right?
Okay.
When I played against him, he was not the two-time MVP. He was not what we're seeing now, but I have him at five. Obviously, you can argue either way, lots of ways. The version I played against, I had him as the fifth hardest player that we've had to guard as a team collectively. Obviously, I'm not guarding him, but we see what he has to offer, the versatility, the skill set. Averaging a triple-double, gets 30 when he feels like it, can get 40.
Who's number four?
Five. Four, I got AD. I played against bubble AD, AD that shot threes. I played against AD that played some five and enjoyed playing the five. I played against AD who was getting treatment at 2 a.m., so he was always available, AD. I had him at four. He speaks volumes in terms of defense, presence, what he has to offer, and the impact. Played against him in the bubble playoffs.
All right, number three.
Three, we got Bron. I played against Bubble Bron in the playoffs. The versatility speaks for itself, the dominance, finishing around the basket, his ability to play make. He was shooting a three at a high clip. He was having a crazy playoff run this year. Obviously, the ankle injury, the foot injury, whatever he had, kind of slowed him down this season.
Number two.
I played against this guy way too many times. You talk about dominance, it's Steph Curry. Ability to shoot with range, ability to be on the ball, off the ball, unanimous MVP. I played against a lot of different versions of Steph Curry. Steph Curry before the multiple championships, Steph Curry when he had to play alongside KD, Steph Curry after KD. I've seen every version. Elite. One, I got KD because of his versatility and ability to obviously score in the post. He can get fouled. And the version I played against of KD was obviously before some of the injuries he's had. But he's still very dominant. He's still very efficient. He's still very effective. This is the list of guys I've played against in the playoffs. Obviously, there's other players. There's the Bookers of the world. I played with Dame and against Dame, but not in the playoffs. So this is my personal opinion, and the list could be interchangeable. And you could have guys in it. You could take guys out of it. But this is just my humble opinion.
No, personal. Don't qualify.
See, you're doing, he's like you're don't come at me on social media.
You're speaking to the comments already. Already speaking to the comments that you know are coming. Well, but you have Steph Curry as number two. You had to guard him one-on-one, did you not?
I did have to guard him one-on-one.
You were on him. That was your assignment. He's number two.
The difference is guarding him, this is a guy who's very, very hard to guard. But he's my height, my size. I cannot guard the other guys on this list at all. Like, there's another defender coming. There's a double team coming. This is a guy that's 7 foot that can do most of the things he does. He just has the ball in his hands more.
What do you do when you're, like, it switches, and now all of a sudden it's you, and there's a 7 footer who can shoot from half court that you're facing? What are you doing in that situation?
Be extremely physical and call for the double team.
Come on.
I need help here. Yeah. This is a 7 footer, dominant.
How much better is this guy compared to the guy you picked?
He was very good and unstoppable when we played against him. We did double teams. We tried the make Joker pass thing, and he went and got 12 assists. We tried to make Joker score thing, and he scored 40. And we had a 4-5 overtime game, so the conditioning was there. But this version now is more poised, more under control, more at peace, has better pieces around him as well that makes him go. And I think for him, as he's played each year, he's continued to get better and more efficient. And there's a reason why he should have been, you know, three-time MVP.
Zach Lowe, give me your thoughts on the list.
I think Joker played 60-something minutes in that game, CJ. I remember that game vividly. I want to tweak CJ. I want to say he disrespected someone. I want to get him in trouble. But he's too cagey. He's bobbing and weaving. He's qualifying the list. None of the Eastern Conference guys like Giannis and Tatum and Embiid can be on it. I like
Never
the list.
Never played against them.
Curry and Durant are two of the best offensive players in the history of the league. Joker, you mentioned it's now 4 years ago. I think the last time you faced him, I can live with him at five. I like the list. I got nothing to say.
I love it. I love it. Listen, we talked about this in finals history. The teams, when you talk about game three in a 1-1 series, team that wins 80% of the time. So tonight, Caesars Sportsbook has Denver as the favorites tonight, -2.5 and -150 on the money line. So that means it's time to make some picks for tonight's game. Zach Lowe, who's winning?
I have no idea. You want me to pick this game? I have no idea. I think Denver's better. I think they should win. My gut is saying Miami. I guess I'm going to go with my brain and say Denver, but I don't know.
All right. And you see the rest of the picks. All of you guys got Denver. I'm the only one with the Miami Heat. I think the Miami Heat win tonight. I think you've given them life. And I think they get after it tonight. I think the Miami Heat's going to shock everybody and win game three.
It wouldn't shock anybody. It wouldn't shock anybody. Don't let this be a close game in the fourth quarter, of course. Watch early fourth quarter as well. That's been an issue for Denver. But this is must win for Denver. Their best game of the playoffs has to be tonight.
All right. Of course, we got game three of the NBA Finals. It is tonight at 8:30 Eastern on ABC, ESPN Deportes, ESPN Radio. Our coverage tips with Greeny and the NBA Countdown crew. That is at 8 o'clock. All right, back to that stunning announcement in the world of golf. The PGA Tour is joining forces with LIV Golf and DP World Tour to unify the game globally. The landmark deal between the tours and Saudi Arabia's public interest fund was reached without the knowledge of many PGA Tour members and LIV Golf members. Moments ago, Rory McIlroy spoke about it.
It was a surprise. I knew there had been discussions going on in the background. I knew that lines of communication had been opened up. I obviously didn't expect it to happen as quickly as it did. But I really think that, you know, from what I gathered, the tour felt they were in a real position of strength. When I try to remove myself from the situation and I look at the bigger picture and I look at 10 years down the line, you know, I think ultimately this is going to be, it's going to be good for the game of professional golf. I think it secures the, it unifies it and it secures its financial future.
So that was Rory McIlroy just moments ago from the Canadian Open. Now, PGA Tour Commissioner Jay Moynihan met with players yesterday in what he described as a, quote, contentious meeting. Many players found out about the unification deal via social media yesterday before even seeing a memo that was sent to them by Moynihan. All right. First Take, of course, follows us at the top of the hour. Is Butler and Bam the key for the Heat to win this series? And what does that PGA LIV unification mean for golf? Stephen A., Molly, Mad Dog, more on First Take, and they come your way at the top of the hour. Man, what a lineup we've got for you starting Friday night. Of course, game four of the NBA Finals on ABC. Game three is tonight. Saturday night, we have UFC 289. The main card begins at 10 Eastern on pay-per-view. Then Sunday afternoon, we've got a WNBA doubleheader on ABC. It starts with the Wings and Liberty, followed by the Mystics and the Storm. And our Sunday night baseball game features the Red Sox and the Yankees. How about some tennis? French Open quarterfinals, rematch of last year's finals. Coco Gauff taking on Iga Swiatek. You know, Gauff 0-6 against Swiatek, and this is set point. Coming up here is Swiatek. It's Gauff serving, and watch the power here on this rally by Iga right there. Down the line. First set goes to Swiatek. She just overpowers Coco. Second set now. And it's Gauff serving down 5-2 set point for Swiatek. And Coco, one of her issues, the unforced errors at the net. This match just happened moments ago. That's match set point. Swiatek now 7-0 against Coco Gauff. She heads to the semifinals. She'll face Beatriz Haddad-Maia in the semis. Meanwhile, on planet Earth, how about NBA prospect Victor Wembanyama? This guy's like 7'5", juggling three basketballs. How about the dexterity of this young man? I mean, look at this, CJ McCollum.
That is impressive.
It is impressive, isn't it?
He's really swagging this out here.
He's swagging this out.
Like he's dancing.
Good luck guarding him next season, CJ.
You want to talk about impressive? How about a guy doing two basketballs? Now, having a few issues.
He's really, really swagging this out. Look at this short haircut.
I know. How about that?
My waist is
popping. And the Portland uniform here.
Only need one to shoot 40% from three. Yeah,
there you go. You're right about that.
That's a great point.
I love it. This was a lot of fun here. And, of course, we'll be back with you tomorrow. First Take, Molly, Stephen A., Mad Dog, they're next.